This week on TERP Weekly Edition. It's that time of year again. SGA elections are upon us, and the campaign trail is heating up. From the SGA on campus to the big boys on Capitol Hill, a government shutdown is never a good thing. And the ethical dilemma behind eating meat. Who comes first, humans or animals? This is TERP Weekly Edition, a student-produced weekly radio news magazine from the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is presented in cooperation with 88.1 FM, WMUC Radio. I'm Jason Murphy, and welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. As the school year comes to a close, elections for next year's student government are underway on campus. Tyler Radeke examines one party and their pledge to action.
With every new school year comes new student government at Maryland, and usually with that, broken campaign promises and inactivity from the new students in power. This year, though, the Action Party hopes to change that. Led by a diverse group of students, the party hopes to take power and enact real, tangible changes to the student body's everyday life, according to party member Michelle Chan.
Some of the main points that we've talked a lot to students about and that they've been very receptive to are the idea to increase the number of study days between the end of classes and start of finals. We also want to put more clear parking signs up in the parking lots, because right now they're very confusing, very wordy, and a lot of students park in the wrong area and they don't realize it and then they get ticketed.
The Action Party is opposed by the Love Party, which also claims heavy experience in student government and connections with administrators. The Love Party's platform includes cheaper textbooks, a more receptive SGA culture, and more resources for student groups. The Action Party, though, feels some of those are unrealistic.
Ours is much more focused on being tangible and feasible to students. We've worked with administration before, because 50% of our ticket is people who are currently in SGA, and I think that's beneficial because working with administration is really difficult.
Additionally, Chan says the Action Party's experience in student government is a prime factor in why students should shift their vote to her party.
You need experience with it, and then we have that. Our presidential candidate, Kai Yishe, sat on the committee that picked the new president, Dr. Lowe. And I think that's very significant, and it shows that we have those working relationships to get things done.
The relationship with the administration, the tangible goals, the Action Party's platform seems reasonable. But still, says Chan, they face challenges every day connecting with students.
The biggest challenge has been getting across the message to the student body that this is not the same old SGA. SGA does need to change. It needs to be more welcoming to students, and it needs to get the word out a lot of the time.
They, like the Love Party, have invoked social media to try to reach out to students. Junior Billy Braun leads the Action Party's Facebook page and has tried to make the party as well known on campus as possible.
So we made sure that we tried to get our information to as many people as possible. It really helps to be able to use social media. So that's where I was mainly focused, with using Facebook to its fullest potential.
And as the polls come to a close and the votes are tallied, the Action Party certainly hopes that their campaigning enticed enough students to get out and elect their party into office next year. From College Park, I'm Tyler Radeke, TERP Weekly Edition.
Braun and Chan will know if their efforts paid off on Thursday night when the election results are officially announced. What's worse than an ineffective government? Brian Hoffman tells us it's one that shuts down.
To the relief of the American people, the federal government last week avoided its first shutdown since 1995 by agreeing on a budget for the remainder of the fiscal year. But what exactly does it mean to shut down? Entities not considered essential, like museums and national parks, would have closed, while more important services like police, firefighters, and the armed forces would have remained on the job. Still, it was a close call for a Congress and president already with low approval ratings. Jonathan Slaughter interns in Washington with Congressman Lloyd Doggett of Texas, and he felt the pressure in the days leading up to the possible shutdown.
The people were not very happy about it. I kept on getting, constituent emails talking about things that should be compromised.
And what else?
A lot of the citizens were unhappy about that if the government were to shut down, that the congressmen and people would still get even paid or regardless of whether or not the government was shut down.
Slaughter says he doesn't blame residents for their unhappiness and can understand why frustration continues to mount.
Because of the polarization, I think that it's stalemated a lot of policies, and thus the people have become very wary about the government getting anything done, or even believing that they have their best, that they have the people's wills at heart.
Meanwhile, Maryland students were mixed in their reactions to the near shutdown.
The fact that we came so close, even a few, less than a few hours away from shutting down, all the resources, no trash pickup in D.C. is really just a testament to the brutal political climate that we live in right now, and in which Democrats and Republicans just aren't willing to budge on any issue to appease each other.
They got things settled, so that was a good thing to see that our government, could, when the pressure was on them, come to a consensus on the budget.
While the storm may have passed this time, don't look now, but there may be more budget trouble in 2012, so stay tuned. Never a dull moment in Washington. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Brian Hoffman.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Eating meat. It's been discussed as an ethical question. Kenny Gartner went to an ethical debate sponsored by the Maryland Debate Club and tells us what the beef was.
Thank you very much for being here to discuss the question, is eating meat ethical?
In one corner stood Bruce Friedrich, Vice President of Policy for the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, and in the other, Matt Katz of the Maryland Debate Club, here to discuss the ethics of eating meat. About 75 people were present for the debate Wednesday afternoon, which matched PETA's ethical stance against Katz's somewhat different approach. Friedrich started out the debate with a disclaimer.
I'm not going to ask anybody in here whether you do eat meat or you don't eat meat. I'm not going to ask you to change any of the ethical views that you already hold.
He said people have an ethical responsibility towards animals and the environment. He also reminded people of a darker side to the meat industry.
Once we start looking at what the meat industry does to animals and what the meat industry does to the environment, I hope you will come to agree with me that eating meat is unethical.
But Katz put logic to that argument.
When something is good for the environment but bad for animals, how would that paradigm guide our decision-making?
One of PETA's biggest issues is animal abuse. Friedrich had a surprising statistic to back up his organization's stance.
97% of Americans believe that animals should be legally protected from abuse. And 97% of Americans don't agree on anything.
But there again, Katz raised an interesting point. Do humans come first, or must we put animals ahead of ourselves?
I would give you the example of, for example, a child being attacked by a dog. Obviously, that would be cruel to animals to attack to stop the dog, to put the dog down. But it's good for the child. And I don't think he explains to us how we make these difficult rights wings.
Katz finished off with good advice for everyone.
While these slaughterhouses are terribly cruel, and while these are things that we probably shouldn't support and advocate for, there are ways that are not cruel to eat meat.
Figuring out the best way for everyone to eat ethically. Kenny Gartner, Terp Weekly Edition.
In my soup, monkeys and rabbits loop-a-loop. Gosh, oh gee, but I have fun swallowing animals one by one. In every bowl of soup I see lions and tigers watching me. I make them jump right through, wahoo, those animal crackers in my soup.
Still to come on Terp Weekly Edition. Spring football practices are underway. We have the inside scoop from the Diamondbacks' Connor Walsh. And our own Devin Miller takes an inside look at one of the more active majors on campus. I'm Jason Murphy. Welcome back. Crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does. Or so goes the quote from Wedding Crashers. I sat down with Diamondbacks senior reporter Connor Walsh to discuss the validity of that statement and this fall's football season.
Randy Edsall is the new coach of the football team. It seemed like Ralph was really good at motivating for big games last year. How well do you think Edsall can handle that role?
I mean, at this point, Edsall seems very almost even keel to me. I mean, I haven't seen him out on the practice field or anything along those lines, but it seems like the players are responding to his discipline, his academic discipline, and off the field discipline. So, I mean, we'll have to see with his track record, the way he turned around UConn. I got to imagine that he is a good motivator. But then again, they got blown out in a BCS bowl. So who knows how far motivation can go?
There is talk of a quarterback battle this year. Do you think those rumors are true, or do you think it's just a motivation ploy?
Personally, I think I would be astonished if O'Brien isn't starting in the fall, but I mean, Brown has some talent. He was, I think, number 17 dual threat quarterback when he was coming out of high school in the country, so I mean, who knows, but I can't imagine that O'Brien will lose his job. I asked Edsall about what he thought of the depth at running back, and he said, obviously, like, he's concerned with the depth, but I think his direct quote was, we'll be fine at running back, so.
One of the other big stories of the spring so far was Cliff Tucker suiting up for the team in this past week. What do you make of that and what he can bring to the team?
I mean, who knows? I mean, he got recruited by Nebraska, and he had an offer from Nebraska coming out of Chapin High School in El Paso. So, I mean, he put up big numbers. I think he had 19 receiving touchdowns as a senior there. He's 6'6", and he's fast, but he hasn't played in 4 years.
One of the things that Don Brown was known for was his blitz schemes and just constantly blitzing. How does that play into the defense this year? Going into a different coordinator, how does that affect what the players do?
Well, I mean, he's putting in an entirely different defense. It's almost like a prevent defense. They're going to be in coverage a lot. They're not going to be very blitz heavy. I know Edsall said they didn't even practice blitz schemes during the first week of spring practice. So it's going to be weird for those guys. I mean, obviously guys like Kenny Tate and Demetrius Hartsfield were recruited for their ability to rush the passer a little bit, make pressure on back there. I think Justin Anderson is his name. They switched him to D-end from linebacker. So maybe they're looking to put pressure from the defensive line on the quarterback. Maybe they're confident in their front three being able to get in there and allow them some more help in the secondary, which, I mean, obviously, judging on last year, they could use.
One of the other big areas of concern is special teams. It was such a big part of this team last year. Mm-hmm. How do you think special teams will fare this season?
I think their special teams could be a strength. They're an athletic team, and they look like they got some speed. So in coverage, they should be decent on punts and kickoffs. Edsall is real high on Nick Ferrara so far. Apparently, he's been kicking the ball well.
And the big question, can this team reach the Orange Bowl?
No. Not necessarily because of them, but because of Florida State. The offense is learning a new scheme. The defense is learning a new scheme. With all the intangibles going around this team this year, I'd be very surprised if they make it to the Orange Bowl.
So no Orange Bowl in sight, according to Connor. But with the semester winding down, there are far more important things on the minds of the student-athletes ready to compete in the fall. The last few weeks of school mean papers, tests, and projects, right? That's not the case for everyone. For some, it means rehearsing and performing. Devin Miller met with a student who's doing just that.
Psychology, criminal justice, English, dance. Which one doesn't belong? Dance isn't an academic major that normally comes to mind first. For dance majors, class doesn't mean sitting at a desk and taking notes. Imagine going to class and breaking a sweat. Sophomore Jessica Salmon has been dancing since she was 3. Ballet, jazz, modern, hip-hop, you name it. She decided to follow her passion in college, but says it's a lot of hard work.
I have back-to-back classes every day, about 5 classes a day, so I'm always moving, I'm always running around in dance clothes, but every class, you stretch, you dance, you do everything, and I have to say I'm exhausted by the end of the day.
Exhausted, but she says it's completely worth it.
I love expressing myself. It's a great way to really let yourself go and explore every emotion.
Salmon says her major requires physical strength and endurance, that often gets overlooked by non-dance majors.
Your grade depends on what you do and how you do it. And so we put in hard work just to get an A, while people can sit there and write a paper and get an A.
Fewer papers and more physical activity. But what does a dance major do after graduation? Salmon has her dream job already planned out.
Eventually, I'd like to open up a fitness center that would be half a gym, half a dance studio, and I can help regular people looking to work out be more graceful and work on their body, and then help dancers gain the strength they need.
Salmon proves there are opportunities that take place off of the stage. At the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center, I'm Devin Miller, TERP Weekly Edition.
The dance department doesn't require students to audition to get into the program, but prior dance experience is highly preferred. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition on 88.1 FM WMUC. Coming up, college is the step between living at home and having a home of your own, but when and where does a family come into those plans? And the location where one moves after college is also a big question. Some College Park graduates actually stay right here at the end of their college years. As college students, the future is a topic we're used to talking about. But what you want out of the future can be tricky. A career? To be a parent? Kristen Foca found out that it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Career, family, family, career. These two ideas are ones that often battle each other when parents are trying to maintain that work-life balance. The majority of families today are dual earners, meaning both parents in the household work, which at times can create stress and work-family conflict. Understanding the positive qualities in having multiple roles can be helpful. Heather Ganginas Delpino, a sixth-year grad student in the counseling program, has been studying work-family interface, a topic she chose for personal reasons and to potentially help others.
I knew I wanted to aspire to some kind of career, even though I didn't know what that was yet. My mom was actually more of a stay-at-home mom. Her and my dad had a business together, but she was at home with us a lot. You know, part of me wanted to do that, but I also wanted to challenge myself in my education.
But like many career-driven women, the thought of balancing the dreams of a family and working can be scary.
As I went through school and applied to graduate school, I thought, well, how am I going to do this? How am I going to have a family and also a career? And ultimately, I mean, I ended up having my son in graduate school. So I think initially it was an interest in just how do women generally combine these two roles? And then for myself, like, I thought, how am I going to combine these two roles?
In 2009, it was reported that women accounted for 47% of the total workforce, up from 29% in 1950. And today, the national labor force is 59% women. These statistics are part of what inspired Heather to do a study comprised of women who are working and have a child living at home under the age of 16. What she found was not only enlightening for her research, but for her own life as well.
I think as a mom myself, it's helped me think about the enriching parts of having multiple roles. Originally, it felt really stressful, but through the research, and I'm hoping that for other women this happens too, really learn to think about how does my work impact my family in a good way, and how does my family impact my work in a good way, and in an enriching way. So I've been more mindful of that, and it really helps me, you know, look forward to work, look forward to family, and just feel like I am better able to manage both.
So the next time you're picturing your future and think, career, family, understand you really can have it all. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Kristen Foca.
This study is also currently being done in Israel and Korea. We'll see how people maintain that work-life balance worldwide.
Feeling all right, heading out tonight, maybe off to a dark driveway. Saying now something bored, so longing for more. We all just decide to stay. We got nothing to do, but when I look to you, I saw someone I knew and I loved.
Upon graduating from Maryland, many former students pack up their lives in College Park and move on to bigger and better things. While this is common for most, Emily Jacobs tells us how some recent grads are actually staying in College Park after graduation and making the switch from student to College Park resident.
After walking across the stage and receiving their diplomas, many recent graduates will tell you that they are ready to get out of College Park. With their college years officially behind them, new alumni seem to have a negative perception about staying in this college town. But not Danielle Kirshner. This recent December graduate decided to stay in College Park after graduation and has been living here for the past 4 months. Kirshner, who graduated with a degree in communication, stayed in College Park to keep her job here and to avoid having to move back home.
Well, I didn't really have a set plan yet until kind of recently, so I didn't really want to move back home, and my lease wasn't up yet, and I had a job here already, so it didn't really make sense to go back home while I still had a job, especially if I didn't want to move back home. Yeah, it just made more sense to, like, live out here with my job and everything.
While some might think that living here and not going to class would take some adjustment, Kirshner explained that being a resident of College Park isn't as bad as one would think.
I thought it would be, but it's really not because I've been living in the same place. So in terms of like who my roommate is and like my friends are all still here. So while I'm not in class, I've been working. It's not like I've just been sitting at home with nothing to do.
Shimmy Rabin, who also graduated in December, echoed Kirshner's views of living in College Park after graduation. Rabin explained that living here has allowed him to make the sometimes difficult transition between the college life and the real world.
I kind of think it's been good because, like, I still have my social life when I come back from work. I'm still able to go out with my friends. It was kind of like, you know, preparing me to, like, let go of that and then enter the real world completely. But so far, it's been a lot of fun.
Rabin, who has plans to live in College Park until his lease is up in August, said that living here after graduation is only for those who still want an active social life.
It depends what you're looking for. If you really, you know, are doing a job where you might have to do overtime when you get home, or you might have to do this and that, then it's probably not the place for you. It depends who you're living with, depends what type of person you are. If you want to still have a social life, College Park is definitely the place to be. You're near DC, you're 40 minutes away from Baltimore. You know, it's just a really good place to be.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Emily Jacobs.
Both Rabin and Kirshner have full-time jobs in the College Park and Greenbelt area. Well, that just about wraps up this Terp Weekly Edition, but first, a preview of a story for our next edition. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and sexual assault is a major issue on college campuses, with nationwide statistics saying that 1 in 5 women will be sexually assaulted by the time they graduate. From our partners in the Journalism School at the CNS Bureau, a story about a high-profile former athlete at Maryland who was suspended for a full year for violating the Student Code of Conduct policy in relation to sexual assault. Tune in next week for the full story. Our producer this week is Devin Miller, our editor Tyler Radicke. Technical production by Kenny Gartner. Assistant producers Emily Jacobs, Kristen Foka, and Brian Hoffman. Our executive producer is Max Kakis. Listen to us online anytime at www.twe.umd.edu. I'm Jason Murphy. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Terp Weekly Edition, a presentation of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, in cooperation with 88.1 WMUC-FM in College Park.